Now, I want to talk with you this morning about another theme from the book of Proverbs that will help us all to live wise lives. This particular theme I am calling Preparation for the Future. And I want to start with a proverb that I like a lot. It's Proverbs 24:10, and we'll talk about that one in a few minutes and then bring some other ones in. Preparation for the future. Proverbs 24:10 says, "If you are slack in the day of distress, your strength is limited." Now, at first glance, you may look at this little jewel and say, "Wow, that doesn't seem to be saying a whole lot." Several years ago, I was reading this chapter in Proverbs, and I stopped at this verse, and I thought about it because it didn't seem to me to be saying very much, and I knew that couldn't be right. And so I camped out for a while. I thought about it for a long time. We call that meditation. It's not saying a word over and over again. It's thinking about something for a long time. And so I thought about this little verse, and I discovered that it is power-packed with meaning that is helpful in knowing how to live your life. Now, this passage mentions something that we don't necessarily like to think about, but we are somewhat aware of anyway, and that's the day of distress. That's just a way to describe hard times. It doesn't mean the one particular day of your life. It's when hard times come, setbacks, hardships, grief, some kind of trouble. Is all of that kind of stuff that comes along is characterized as the day of distress. And as I thought about this proverb, one of the things that occurred to me is that this day of distress comes to everybody's life. Everybody gets these. Hard times, difficulties, trouble, all of that stuff is assumed in this proverb. It does not say, if you are one of those unlucky people who happens to have, at some point, a day of distress, it just takes for granted that you're going to have them. And that's how it is. And you think, well, that's a little bit obvious. Well, yeah, and that's the point. Because everybody does know that the day of distress is coming, right? Mark Parker knows. Can see by the look on his face, he knows. Don't you, buddy? He's got his finger in his mouth. He's looking a little stressed. He knows. You know it's coming. And in spite of that being so obvious from your experience, from watching other people's lives, there's nobody in this room who does not recognize there are going to be hard days. People are still unprepared for it when it comes, are they not? Are you not shocked? Well, I didn't think this was going to happen. Well, I can't believe this is happening to me. Most of us don't give much attention to the fact that there are going to be hard times, not when we're in the middle of good times. When you're having a good year financially, good year at work, you don't think to yourself, next year there could be a famine. What you think is, now next year's raise I could use to get this too. Don't you? You're not thinking about the day of distress. We don't think that way. So let it sink in for a moment. The day of distress is coming. If you're having good times now, it won't be this way forever, not for all of the rest of your life. There are going to be some bad days too. They come along from time to time. They come into everybody's life. So I'm sitting there years ago looking at this verse, thinking to myself, okay, I see that. And then I looked at it some more, and something else I learned is that the day of distress is when your strength is really tested. I don't know if you've ever thought about this, but you really find out what you're made of when you have trouble. And you really don't know until the pressure comes what you're really able to deal with, how much strength you really have. You don't know if you're slack until there's something that comes along to test you. So you don't really have a good measure of that on your best days. And if you are slack on the day of distress, then you find out you have a problem right in the middle of the distress, don't you? I thought I could handle this, but apparently I cannot. You learn that your strength is limited when you're in the midst of something that you can't handle. Now, when I have the time to do it, I love to go fishing. And early on in my fishing endeavors, I learned a very important lesson. Fishing line is ranked. It's graded according to how much weight it's supposed to support. If you're going trout fishing, the biggest, strongest line you'd want to use would be 6-pound test line. That means it's supposed to hold 6 pounds, and it's been tested. If you want to catch a lot of trout, you need to use 4-pound line, and if you're really, really good, you can use 2-pound line. But that's how strong it's supposed to be. Now, the thing is, if you tie your knot improperly and weaken that line, or if while you're fishing you nick that line on something under the water that you can't see, it's no longer going to hold the whole 6 pounds, is it? Or the whole 4 or the whole 2. It's strong enough to bring the lure back, so you don't know you have a problem. You didn't pay attention when you tied the knot, or you nicked it on something, and you didn't check the line when you had trouble getting it back on that one cast, and you're still fishing, and the lure's coming back every time. And you don't know. When do you find out? When the thing happens that you came there for, and the line snaps. That wasn't 6 pounds of pressure. Something was wrong. You find out that your strength is more limited than you thought it was when you need your strength the most. That's how life is. Fishing, life, whatever, the fish got away, you didn't have the strength. That's when you find out what you're made of. So the day of distress is coming. Most of us don't think about it, even though we know, in theory, that it's coming. The day of distress is when your strength is tested and when you find out what you have. It's when the real pressure comes. Another thing I want you to think about from this proverb, and this is the point of the lesson today, the day of distress can be prepared for. You can get ready. Now, what other reason would there possibly be for this little proverb to be in God's Scripture? If you're slack in the day of distress, your strength is limited. Would it be here so that you can see some poor brother whose life is a shambles now, and you walk over to him, and while he lays there crying in the dust, you say, "Dude, your strength sure was limited. I got that in the Bible." That's not why it's here. Or so that you can be the one in the shambles and go, I guess my strength was limited. No, this is here so that you will take notice now and be warned in advance and make adequate preparation for hard times, because they're going to come along, so that you can do what needs to be done during the good days and have the strength you need for the bad days. Now, if you find yourself in a mess, your life is in a shambles, it's okay for you to do that self-evaluation and say, "Well, my strength was not nearly what I thought it was." But that's not the end of it. The point still is get ready for the next round, because there'll be challenges, and they can be prepared for. Now, obviously, if you're going to do this, you have to do it in advance of any trouble that comes along in your life. When the day of distress arrives, it's too late to get ready for that one. If you're slack, you're already slack. It's the day of distress. It's here. You can't handle it already. You already don't have the strength to deal with this. How are you going to add a training program to the package and deal with it? So you have to prepare for trouble or for goals, anything positive as well, when it hasn't come up yet. You prepare for trouble when trouble is not defining your life. You're not reacting to things in the midst of a crisis. You're not in crisis management mode. So that means that you have to be growing and getting stronger on the good days, when you don't have the trouble, when there are not so many pressing needs. Now, sometimes people get a little super spiritual about this preparation business. And they say, well, the Lord's going to provide. I don't want to get all wrapped up in that because the Lord's going to provide. He'll take care of me and I can just not, I'm not going to be burdened with that. And they think that a lack of preparation somehow indicates a higher spiritual level, that that's more living by faith than the guy who has a savings account or the guy who's preparing himself for mental and physical challenges daily or the guy who's trying to be better at his job. Oh, that guy doesn't have any faith. God's going to give me the customers I need. I'll just sit here and wait for the phone to ring. Well, which way is it? Is that more spiritual or is preparation more spiritual? Look at Proverbs 21:31. This is one of the verses that would easily be distorted by those who think preparation is unspiritual. And so I want to show it to you so you can think about it. Proverbs 21:31 says, "The horse is prepared for the day of battle, but victory belongs to the Lord." Now, the person who's thinking that it's more spiritual not to prepare is going to say, victory belongs to the Lord. We don't need the horses. In fact, it would be evidence of our lack of faith if we were to prepare horses for the day of battle. I would just point out to you that this verse does not say, don't prepare the horses. It says the horse is prepared for the day of battle, but victory comes from the Lord. This is that constant balance that's in the Scripture between your responsibility and God's sovereignty. You prepare, God provides. You're a good steward, God makes it work. Victory belongs to Him. That doesn't mean you sit on your laurels. Making preparation is not inconsistent with belief in God's sovereignty. Look back a little further to Proverbs 20, verse 18. It says, "Prepare plans by consultation and make war by wise guidance." So even in this same idea of war that's in that other proverb, we've got preparation being called for. Prepare for the future. It's not inconsistent with believing in God's sovereignty. Instead, your God-given way to compensate for your weaknesses is to think about what life is like and prepare for it while you believe in God's sovereignty. While you trust that God's the one who's going to make it work, still you have a responsibility to use your resources to do what you can to be prepared for whatever's coming, mentally, physically, materially, spiritually. Look at Proverbs 30, verses 24 through 28. "Four things are small on the earth, but they are exceedingly wise. The ants are not strong people, but they prepare their food in the summer. The Shephanim are not mighty people, yet they make their houses in the rocks. The locusts have no king, yet all of them go out in ranks. The lizard you may grasp with your hands, yet it is in kings' palaces." Now here's a series of verses that point out the inherent weakness of certain creatures that live in the world. And it specifically is pointing out that these creatures aren't that strong. And yet they've got a way of surviving that works. And especially I want you to think about the ants. They're not that strong. People make a big deal of how many times their body weight they can lift. It's still an ant. It's not strong. When you think about it in terms of the pressures of the world, the physical pressures of living in this world, the other creatures that an ant has to contend with in order to survive, it's not strong. Even the dreaded fire ant is easy enough to kill. If you get one on you, you say, "Oh, there's a fire ant on my arm. That kind of feels good." and the ant's dead. It doesn't hurt you. You have pressure to kill the ant. It doesn't hurt you. Mash him against your face. It doesn't hurt. The ant's dead. They're not strong. And yet, if you've ever tried to eradicate all of them from your yard, you know what this passage is talking about, don't you? These tiny little creatures have prepared well to be able to survive. They're always working, carrying what they need below ground where you can't get to them easily. You see a mound and you're like, wow, there's another fire ant mound in my yard. And if you disturb the mound, a few hundred thousand of them will come boiling out of the ground, but you're not seeing a tenth of what's there. They've got hundreds of ways in and out of that place that you can't see. They got food down there. When winter comes, they're just going to stay down there. And when winter's over, they're coming up stronger than they were when it started because they've been eating all winter. And the frost is gone. They're right back on top getting ready for the next whatever hard comes along. And we're supposed to learn from this example. Make preparation for the things that you're going to need in life. There are going to be hard times. Everybody has them. Nobody, well, almost nobody, is really expecting it to happen to me, though. You know, I don't really guess it's coming. And the book of Proverbs is saying, expect it. Plan for a famine. Plan for times that test you spiritually. Go ahead and get ready ahead of time. If you're ready, it'll be because you prepared in advance. One more thought about this issue of preparation. Prepare by priority. Look at Proverbs 24, 27. Proverbs 24, 27. Prepare your work outside and make it ready for yourself in the field. Afterwards, then build your house. So the picture here is of a person who maybe is moving out into a wilderness area. You've got to set up everything. Or maybe moving from mom and dad's farm to establish your own farm on vacant land that you've bought or you've leased or whatever. You've got to set it up. There's nothing there. You need a house. You need a crop. You need everything that people need in order to live. This is saying plant the crop first, then build the house. Do you want to live in a tent for a year and eat? Or do you want to starve to death right about the time you get your house like you want it to be? There's an order to the things you need to prepare in your life. You need to think through the priorities and pick the things that you have to have first, and the things that you'd like to have come later. And we can apply that to anything in life, can't we? There's a sensible order to the things that you need. Some things are more valuable than others. Some things are more necessary than other things. Some things have to come first for you to have a good life. And so one of the questions to ask yourself today is, am I preparing things in the right order? You know, are you making sure that the things you need the most are covered? Are the spiritual needs of yourself and your family taken care of first? Are those covered? Or do temporary pleasures continually squeeze those things out of your life? Now, we're going to get to that. We want to grow. I mean, we're going to get to that spiritual stuff later. But right now, we got some fun things to do. Are you taking care of your basic life needs first, or does the fun come first, thinking, well, I'll deal with that stuff later? If you're slack in the day of distress, your strength is limited. Now, I want you to think with me for a moment or two about some of the places we can apply this. And there are two categories I want to start with, and then we'll add whatever categories to that we can. But two main areas of preparation for your life. You got spiritual preparation and material preparation. Let's talk about the spiritual side of your life first. If you're slack in the day of distress, your strength is limited. First and foremost, folks, apply this to where you are spiritually. And let's think about it. Where does spiritual strength come from? If you're going to prepare yourself to be strong spiritually, if you're going to do that when you're not in the middle of a crisis, when your faith is not being tested, how do you get ready? What do you need to do in order to prepare spiritually?
Pray.
As a regular habit?
Hope.
We're just being theoretical here, so yeah, okay. Pray. Don't cultivate prayerlessness, but cultivate prayerfulness. All right, what else?
Study.
Study.
Weekends are working.
Yeah, you're on today, man. You bring one every week.
Got brain food.
Gotta be. Who's got 2 Timothy 4:13? Is that you, Mitchell?
Yes.
All right, read that one for me.
When you come, bring the cloak which I left at Troas with Carpus, and the books. Oh, wrong one.
That's the one.
Oh, and the books, especially the parchments.
Good job. I had to give the hard words to Mitchell, and he nailed them. He said he wasn't scared, so good job, man. Thanks. When you come, bring my coat. Winter's coming. And bring the books. This is Paul, the apostle, speaking. Bring the books. Paul is at the end of his life. This is 2 Timothy. He's done. He wants books. Charles Spurgeon wrote this about that text and about Paul. He is inspired, yet he wants books. He has been preaching for at least 30 years, yet he wants books. He has seen the Lord, and yet he wants books. He has a wider experience than most men, yet he wants books. He had been caught up to the third heaven and had heard things which it is unlawful for a man to utter, yet he wants books. He had written the major part of the New Testament, yet he wants books. The Apostle Paul, at the very end of his life, was still studying. There's another guy you might not notice as readily. Simon Peter spent his life studying too. Peter was a fisherman when the Lord redeemed him. He would have spoken some Greek and some Hebrew and probably some Aramaic. He would not have been a lettered man, however. He would have worked with Dad growing up fishing for a living, not the kind I like to do. A lot of liberal scholars do not believe that Peter wrote the books that we call 1 Peter and 2 Peter because the Greek in them is just about the best Greek that you can read anywhere. In literary terms, it is as fine a construction. The literary style is as good. It's as good as anything that exists. And so the liberals say, well, Peter could not have written these books because Peter was an uneducated man who... No, he spent 30 years studying as an adult. And so he became an expert at the language that he used to communicate with people with the gospel. Bring the books, Paul says. Peter didn't say it where we have it recorded, but you can tell from the way he wrote, he studied. It's a very important aspect of your preparing for the future in terms of being spiritually strong. You got to be learning. What other spiritual disciplines can you think of that will help you to be strong so that when a day of spiritual distress comes on you from something, you'll be ready? What else can you be doing? Serve. Does that help? This is where you nod. It does build strength into your life. What else?
Fellowship.
Works for me. Over time, your service, your fellowship, your study, your prayer are going to develop spiritual strength in you. You're not going to come away from a gathering of church friends or a cup of coffee with one church friend very often and say, "Wow, I feel strong now. A good workout today." But over time, if these things are disciplines of your life, you will be stronger. And then when the day of distress comes, you're going to have something that you can fall back on. What else? Corporate worship. It's not the same as fellowship. Worship. You need your private worship too. But I'm thinking about Hebrews 10, "Do not forsake the assembling together of the saints, as is the habit of some." We need to be encouraging one another. We need to be in worship. I'm preaching to the choir, but you're here, so there you go. Over time, these things make you strong. Over time, the absence of any of these things will make you weak. You won't know you're weak until the day of distress comes and you don't have what you need. But the absence of these things will make you weak. So you build them into your life. You make preparation on the good days. You make these habits. All right, well, what about stewardship of material things? How do you prepare for this? How do you prepare for a day of financial distress? Save.
Stay out of debt.
Which is the opposite of save.
Don't buy on impulse.
Ooh. Now, everybody's guilty of this. Ladies buy a scarf on impulse and the husbands gripe, then husbands go out and buy a car on impulse. So, just so you know, there's nobody who's safe on that one. Honey, I got a good deal.
It was close.
All right, what else?
Pay cash?
I had to leave this morning.
You know, and that's just a technique to keep you from buying on impulse and getting in debt. The credit card's a lot easier. It's real practical. It's harder to turn loose of that green stuff than it is to hand a credit card and get the whole credit card back. There's just something psychological in that. Try it. It works. You want this whole 20 for that, man? Are you crazy? There's another one I want you to think about. And it is the decisions that you make that feed into this one and this one. What do you have to do before you can save?
Have money.
Yeah, you got to have money, yeah, but okay, let's assume you've got a job and it pays something. Now what do you have to do before you can save? Spend something less than 100% of that, right? So the decisions that you make today when things are good determine whether you can save anything. And here's how it works, and I only know this because I've made the mistake. That 3-bedroom house is pretty nice, but you know, that 4-bedroom house isn't that much more. And if we stretch this year, then next year, out of the raise I'm going to get, what did I just do? Impulse, borrowing. I don't know I'm getting a raise next year. Next year may be the famine that's coming. But here's how people think. Well, okay, we can stretch. We can get this now. We want it now. We'll get it now. And we'll catch up next year when we get the raise. And then next year, the raise doesn't come. The other costs go up and you're in trouble. Or some big thing comes along. And now you need to spend $10,000, $12,000, $15,000 that you don't have. So you have to make your decisions so there's room to save. There's enough slack where if you have what I had a month ago, this thing back here fell out. I got it to give the dentist a big old pile of money tomorrow. I should get a new one to go right back there. It is gold, so you know, it's got to be worth it. Yeah, that's what it is. Get it out when I'm gone because it's expensive.
All right.
Yeah, okay. You got to make decisions so you have enough slack to cover the stuff that's coming. The problem is we don't really plan to have it coming, and especially financially. Well, next year there'll be more, and the next year after that there'll be more, and the house is going to appreciate anyway. If we have any problem, we can just refinance. But there might not be more. You might be unemployed. The house may depreciate. Depends on the neighbors, a lot of other factors. So don't presume on the future. Leave some slack. Plan. There's one other aspect of this. I've seen this in churches a lot. If you do save, a lot of times that savings can become an idol. You know, churches have a rainy day fund and will not admit when it's raining. We can't use that. That's our rainy day fund. A tree just fell through the roof, dude. This is raining. You got to spend the money. The reason you need some savings that you can spend when the hard day comes and not go, well, we can't spend that. That's for something else. Well, what other areas of your life might you prepare for in order to be strong? You got spiritual, you got material, but that's not all there is to life. There's some other stuff too and practical things. What else can you be preparing for? You're doing everything else perfectly. You guys are awesome. Is there any application for this stuff where you work? What about in your relationships? Can you prepare to be a better husband? Can you prepare to be a husband? prepare to be a better wife. Can you prepare to be a better parent? Can you improve at that as you go along? All right, what else you got? Any more questions or comments? I'll tell you, talk about money and this crowd just shuts up. Y'all seen that?
Yeah, this whole series isn't very fun.
Twinkie crash.
What?
Twinkie crash.
Twinkie crash.
Could be. Could be. I'm not sure that Twinkie would be preparing me for anything good. Not sure.
Torn up for that long winter, Dave.
I got it covered. Yeah, I'm good for a year or two. All right, well, we can't interrupt Pam yet, but so y'all just stand here and talk. We'll give her about 10 more minutes. Let me lead us in prayer, and we'll stop with that, though.